Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Wow, I can't believe we're already into the third week of the year on Franchise Today. And this, of course, is the third part of our marketing series, Promote Your Brand. But before we get into that and talk with today's guest, Steve Baxter, Senior VP of Worldwide Sales at Set Matrix, I'd like to remind everybody about the upcoming franchise events. We have the IFA convention, February 17th to the 20th, starting off with a tweet up and giving back to the community. For the tweet up, call Jack Monson or Jennifer McDonald and engage one-to-one. They give you more information. It's like we like to refer to as Jack Monson's cocktail party. Also, in line with the IFA convention, I'd like to share some information from the membership committee of the IFA, which I'm a member of, specifically Lane Fisher, the great chair at the membership committee, sent us out a note, said, as leaders in the franchise community, you no doubt appreciate the need for franchise education and networking to new franchisors. The task of being a good franchisor extends far beyond the legal contracts and much knowledge, skill, and experience go into good franchisee relations. The IFA is so convinced that new franchisors need this information and opportunity to network with peers that its new member introductory program comes with one free pass to the IFA convention in Las Vegas from February 17th to the 20th. It means new members pay $3,000 for a two-year membership. And as I said, they get one free pass to the convention in each year of the program, which, by the way, costs non-members $2,250 each to attend. Hopefully we can reach our 2006 all-time high of 1,260 franchisor members by the time of the convention. Really a great opportunity to broaden your horizon. And like I said, you know, trip to Vegas is couple of $1,000, a little bit of gambling money, but really the IFA experience is priceless. And if you are akin to partying too, remember what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Then in March, we have the Multi-Unit Franchising Conference from our friends over at Franchise Update. That's March 27th to 29th. Then the Franchise Finance and Growth Conference by Franchise Times on April 24th and 25th. Both of those will be in Vegas, so looks like we'll be going to Vegas 3 months in a row. And then, of course, the IFA Legal Symposium in late May. And talking about events, too, as many know, with the recent merger of Franchise Essentials and Franchise Foundry, Franchise Foundry is now the producer of Franchise Today, and we're really looking to add to the lineups, as well as to the overall experience to truly build community and build it throughout the year, even beyond when we're broadcasting. And Fran Summit, a strategic partnership originally between Franchise Essentials and Elements Local, now a production also of Franchise Foundry, will also be reinvigorated this year, and we'll be sending out some information soon. And it wouldn't be, I would be remiss in not mentioning that a big part of the development work that we're doing into both of these programs, Franchise Today and France Summit, couldn't be done without the assistance of our strategic public relations and marketing partner, the folks at Fishman Public Relations. We'd really like to thank Deborah Vilches, who is spearheading this, along with Brad and Sherry Fishman, who have really been great partners moving forward. Also, the last couple of days, I got the opportunity to spend some time on panel discussions at two webinars. Yesterday was with Jeremy LeDuc and Michael Boyer from Elements Local. We talked about local marketing. If you'd like an opportunity to listen to that event, I think there's also a PowerPoint presentation. Check out the Elements Local website. Also, the day before, real good friends over at Franchise Business Review, Michelle Rowan. She had they had a three-part series on smart franchise growth, and I was honored to be a panelist along with Michael Mabry of Muya Burgers and Fries, That was Tuesday. Also on the Franchise Business Review site, you can access all three of those webinars. Moving forward, Franchise Today, I know we've been regurgitating this for the last couple of weeks, but I'd be remiss in not mentioning it again. Really has a packed schedule. Today, as I said, Steve Baxter of Set Matrix is with us. We're going to be talking about the customer experience as really a part of marketing. Next week, we'll wrap up our marketing series with Sandy Lechner of Sprout Loud, and we'll be talking about branding, and I think that's really a great way to wrap up the marketing series. Really exciting events for February, as we'll be at the IFA convention, and everything in February we'll talk about the voices of franchising. We're going to lead off with Nick Powles. We'll be discussing 1851 Magazine, their new digital publication and soon-to-be print publication. I really like their approach. It's a younger, more upbeat approach. Not that the rest of franchising is stuffy, but sometimes we need to see things from a different perspective. Maybe the Republican Party could think of that as well. So we'll start off with Nick, and then the following. And also with Nick, I mean, this is really a strategic placement with Nick because he'll help us also transition from the marketing series, obviously with his team at No Limit Media Consulting. They're very much in tune with marketing within the franchise community. So he'll help us transition out of the marketing series into the Voices of Franchising series. And then the following week, after Nick, I am really honored again to have Steve Caldera, CEO and President of the IFA, just 3 days before the IFA convention. Can't imagine what a busy schedule he has, and he's taking the time to come in and talk with us for an hour about the convention, about all going on in the franchise world in Washington, how some of the healthcare issues are affecting franchisors and franchisees alike. Really going to be a fantastic show, and I'm really honored and at IFA's continued involvement and participation in Franchise Today. The following week, I am really honored to have Nancy Weingartner, the executive editor at Franchise Times Magazine, and we'll be talking about that, and I'm still waiting on some confirmation. The following week, hopefully we'll be having the folks up on Franchise Update to wrap up February and the Voices of Franchising. So looking ahead to March, we're going to coincide the schedule with the franchise finance, actually with the multi-unit conference, and we'll be doing the last 2 weeks of the month around multi-unit franchising. The first 2 weeks of the month will be about franchise finance. Hopefully we'll have some of the same guests last year, including Ron Feldman of Franchise America Finance. And, the thing is trying to pin everything buddy down with such busy schedules at a busy time of the year is really difficult, but hopefully we'll be able to get that accomplished here real quick and make the formal announcements for March. And then April and May will be our fourth annual legal series, and it will culminate with a recap of the IFA Legal Symposium in late May. Fantastic lineup. We'll be announcing. Hopefully we'll have some of the previous guests and participants from the previous 3 years' legal series, including Lane Fisher and Warren Lee Lewis, Lee Plays, and just a host of great attorneys willing to volunteer their time. And then in June, we'll wrap up the first part of the year with technology and franchising. Amit Panetra, as everybody knows from Frank Connect, will be one of our guests. And then we'll wrap up June with couple of segments on franchise development. We'll go into the summer series, which we normally have been on hiatus in the past, but this year we're going to be highlighting and spotlighting, showcasing franchisors, but not from a promotional perspective. It'll be more from best practices, and I've already received commitment for the July 11th show from Dina Dwyer Owens of the Dwyer Group, which I think is just a phenomenal group in franchising. Any of the young franchisors looking to emulate a brand, that's a good one to emulate. And then, of course, looking ahead, September, October, and November, we'll put together a lineup around the Public Affairs Conference in September, around the IFA, around Franchise Updates, Leadership and Growth Conference in October, and then, of course, the West Coast Franchise Expo in November, and then, of course, December, we'll do a recap. So really a packed lineup. We're going to do a 50 live shows on Franchise Today, including 6 to 8 special event shows throughout the year. So just a tremendous amount of content. We knew that almost 60 hours of content all circled around and focused around franchise best practices. As I said, last week, our guest was Jeremy LeDuc, and then we did a webinar together this week, and I thank Jeremy for being on. That segment, along with all segments of Franchise Today, are available on demand at blogtalkradio.com/Franchise Today Show. Next week will be Sandy Lechner with Sprout Loud talking about branding. And today we have a special guest live from London, Steve Baxter. For the past 6 years, Steve has been intimately involved with the Net Promoter Score concept created by Fat Matrix. He has over 22 years of experience, hard to believe because he doesn't look much older than 22, in the enterprise software industry as a senior VP of worldwide sales at Fat Matrix. Widely recognized as a visionary and entrepreneur and expert on customer loyalty, he has designed, built, and delivered customer loyalty feedback and retention software to over 70 brands and, get this, over thousands of franchisees. Before joining Fat Matrix, Steve was the founder and CEO of Sustino, which, of course, today is Listen 360, that provided MPS software to the small business market. Prior to this, Steve was the EMEA Managing Director of CDC Software, a global publicly traded enterprise software company, the CEO of StoneSoft. I haven't heard of that, Steve. You have to explain that. StoneSoft USA, and held a variety of executive sales and marketing positions early in his career. I'm really honored that Steve is here because he's regularly invited to be a speaker in the franchising industry. He has a very, very busy schedule. He's delivered keynote speeches to some of the world's largest brands on the subject of customer loyalty, building brand reputation, and the economics of customer centricity. He's also been known to eat a 2-pound ribeye, which I saw on Facebook, which we can talk about. Steve, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thank you, Paul. You're such a charmer.
You have to be, right?
Well, that's fantastic. Yes. And by the way, the steak was fantastic.
I'll tell you, it looked good on Facebook. If anybody wants to learn the true art of cooking restaurant steakhouse quality steaks, you know, take a look at Steve's Facebook page. And I think Steve is also the promotional salesman for the Green Egg Barbecue Grill because I'm in the process of buying one.
I absolutely am. I'm the promoter of the Big Green Egg.
Well, you know, beyond the steak, I mean, you know, what you made last week with short ribs just looked phenomenal. So my wife said, you got to get that recipe too. So anyway, so fun times. Steve, busy time of the year in franchising. I know you're in London. You do about 2 million miles a year in travel. Can't keep up with you. Thank God for social media because we can kind of keep up with you. So, again, welcome to Franchise Today. You know,
it's a privilege. Thank you.
You know, yesterday we talked, it really is a key point to mention that no matter what webinar I'm on, what webinar I'm listening to, how the whole customer experience gets tied into it. Yesterday we're talking about local marketing, customer experience popped up. The other day we're talking about franchise growth, the customer experience popped up. So it's really not this siloed function, this siloed objective that needs to, that was looked at before strictly on its own. And it was almost like an afterthought. You know, if we do all this is said and done and we've delivered good customer service, great. And it's really interesting that this has evolved into the customer experience. But what's sad is that when I talk to franchisees and their staffs, when we're training them in working with the public or working with clients, and we talk about the customer experience, they say, "Oh, well, we provide good customer service." And I said, "Well, explain to me customer service." And they said, "Well, you know, we treat them well. We answer the phone professionally. We're always smiling. And it always ends with this, Steve. And when they have a problem, we're there to take care of it." And that, to the, a lot of people, is the customer experience. And basically what I say to them is, well, then basically you're just giving them what they paid for, and you haven't done anything to really make it an experience. So let's start off with that. You know, in your mind, and as you preach it, what is customer experience?
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right, Paul. I mean, this customer experience thing has become completely, it's endemic now. If it's not, it needs to be. It needs to be endemic and part of the DNA of an organization. And you're right, you know, it used to be something that was sort of tacked on at the end. You know, you're right. You know, you make your product, you sell your product, you have a customer who walks in, buys it, leave. You know, at some point, if a restaurant, for example, you say, you know, how was your dinner, you know, sir or madam, and you get some nodding heads, and, you know, they leave the restaurant, you think, fantastic, you know, I did a good job. And it sort of fell in at the end, rather, and now, you know, it isn't. It's got to be everywhere within the organization. You know, you probably heard the old phrase, you know, everyone's a salesman, like in the company, you know, for years, you know, everybody's a salesman in the company. Well, you know, I think, you know, given the way that people buy now, they're certainly not being sold to, they're buying from, everybody isn't a salesman necessarily. What everybody needs to be is a customer experience person, right? If everybody in the organization isn't completely switched on to the impact that they have on the customer experience at every step of the way, you know, we call it the customer corridor. From the moment that you first begin interacting with the customer, actually, it's before that. Your customers are sort of pre-purchasing nowadays. You know, we can talk a little bit about, I know you're very familiar with like the Zmot marketing model, mm-hmm. but, you know, people are pre-purchasing now, and they're making decisions. And before, they were entering into your business and being influenced by a sales cycle. Now what's happening is, I think, you know, people are entering your business and are looking sort of for validation that everything that they're walking in with, whether it's the review that they've read, the testimonial from their friend, you know, whatever that might be, sort of validation that what they've learned is true. And so they can just go ahead and complete the purchase that they, you know, they intended to make when they walk in. And so at every point in this customer corridor, you have got to be switched on to this customer experience. Otherwise, you lose. It's as simple as that. We did some research. We've done some research over the years, and these numbers I'm going to give you right now are actually quite staggering. And what these numbers tell you is that most companies are starting from a point of disadvantage. Most people are deluding themselves when it comes to a customer experience. This is what we found. We asked hundreds and hundreds of companies, do you deliver a superior customer experience? And I don't mean by this like a good experience, a great experience. I mean better than the competition. When you consider yourself and the service that you deliver and the experience that you're bringing to your customers, are you delivering to that customer an experience that is superior that they can get from anybody else? And incidentally, you mentioned that I speak to thousands of franchisees every year, and I do. And in all of the speeches that I do, you know, I've got hundreds of franchisees, you know, sitting in front of me, and I always ask them this question. And the number of hands that go up is about the same as the number I'm going to give you right now. About 80% of the companies, when asked this question, believe that they deliver a superior customer experience. And so, you know, if you're thinking that, you know, if you're one of the 8 out of 10 people in the room that think you're delivering this best-in-class, superior, better-than-your-competition type experience, well, what incentive is it to improve? You know, what incentive is there to go out to your customer base, really understand it, challenge everybody in the organization to improve when you're already starting from a position where you believe it can't get any better? Now, what we did is we went out to customers of those businesses and we asked them the same question. You know, is the company delivering what you would consider to be a superior customer experience? And the number of companies that had customers that agreed with their position was only 8%. You know, a tenth of the companies that believe that they have a superior customer experience actually did. 90% of them don't. And so that delta between what you think you're delivering and what the customers believe they're experiencing is the difference between success and failure in the marketplace. I mean, it's going to determine whether you live or die, you know, from perspective of the customer. And so this whole customer experience thing now absolutely has to be baked into the DNA of your organization to get away from these kinds of frightening numbers, Paul.
Yeah, they are frightening numbers, and I'm not in the least bit surprised. The way I promote it is delivering positively memorable customer experiences at all times. And if you do that, then obviously you have a promoter of the business, somebody that's out there referring business, coming back to spend more money in the business, and developing loyalty. And I think that's exactly what the basis of this show is, the customer experience as part of marketing. And it's really no longer that gray area. It's a big part of it. You know, taking the step further, I think a lot of people listening to the show, and probably a lot that should be listening to the show, consider the customer experience to start when they actually walk through the door of the business. And in today's digital world, as you know, that experience starts within social media, online, across various social media platforms, on the phone, outside the store, as well as in the store. And it's like the old adage of you can never make you don't have a second chance to make a first impression. I almost believe at this point that we have several first impressions along the way because we have several, quote-unquote, initial points of contact. And I think this leads into a great question, which is, in your opinion, Steve, how have customers' expectations changed over the past few years with respect to the brands that they buy from, and specifically with so many brands that are and should be exposed in the digital world?
Yeah, that's another sort of great question. And you know, before I answer it, you know, I'll you know, I will say, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, people are making the decisions, their purchasing decisions, before they even engage with you now. I mean, people are so much more informed. I mean, think about the last time you bought a car, the last time you went to a restaurant. You know, the last time you bought anything, almost, you know, you go on the web and you look for videos and you look for testimonials and you go to the forums and you ask your friends. You know, you're looking for validation that that what you're thinking right now is good. You know, if you think about buying that BMW or that Volkswagen or whatever that car might be, or you want to make sure that you're sort of making the right choice. And so when you're stepping into the dealership, you almost don't need to drive it. You know, you've seen 37 other people drive it through 37 different conditions, and you've pretty much made your mind up. But you know, to answer your question directly, it's fairly straightforward. You know, so the first thing in terms of, you know, customer expectations is the way it's changed is they're expecting an immediate response. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, they're expecting people to be on the phone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so that, you know, you can call them up and talk to them. But they do expect you to be immediate responsive. I think a great example of that is a lot of the customer service functions moving to Twitter. You mentioned I fly a lot. I do. I fly about 250 to 260,000 miles on Delta alone, and the at Delta Assist on Twitter is a great example of being immediately available. It's quicker for me to shoot a tweet to at Delta Assist than it is to dial 1-800-325-1551. See, look, I even know the number by heart. That tells you how many times I phoned Delta, right? Because to get through to that, then I got to tap my frequent flyer number in, then I got to tap my code in, and then I've got to wait for the person to answer the phone. By the time I've done all of that, I could have tweeted them to say, hey, I've got this issue. Can you look it up and sort it out? And then they've tweeted me back with a resolution. And so, it's not that I expect Delta to have tweets and all this kind of stuff, for me to be satisfied. But what has happened is that because they do that, and because you see other companies, it sort of sets a standard. It's setting the bar. And so when you start to deal with companies that don't have that, it becomes a bit of a letdown. And, you can get this company that's offering what would normally be considered, a couple of years ago, phenomenal customer service. Let's say they have got somebody on the line 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, and they pick up on the third ring. Normally that would be fantastic, right? But it's looking absolutely prehistoric now, compared to something like a tweet directly into customer service. So I think that's one of the things. They're expecting an immediate response. The second thing is related to this.
Steve, yeah, can I ask you one quick question while you're talking about Twitter? I've had somebody ask, what is your Twitter handle?
Steve Baxter 999.
Okay, so that's at Steve Baxter 999 on Twitter. Okay, great. Go ahead.
Cool. So the second thing is it aligns with this first one, and it's that customers expect to be contacted in the method that works best for them. And so for some people it's tweets, some people it's email, some people it's just on the phone. And so this has created the need for best-in-class companies to create multiple channels of customer service communication. So whatever, you've just got to consider, what's working best for them. I think the third thing in terms of expectation is that people expect more now than just your product. I think when we look at products nowadays, it's pretty hard to differentiate, isn't it? When you look at cars, there's almost like no such thing as a bad car anymore, is there? If you buy a point and shoot camera, a phone, they're all great products. And so what differentiates you from your competition as part of this is what comes with the package. And maybe it's an emotional connection with the brand. Maybe it's forming a relationship on the customer service. Maybe it's expertise on how to get the most out of your product. And it's how do you communicate all of this stuff in a way that sort of makes sense for the buyer. The fourth thing I think in terms of expectations is really what we just touched on earlier, which is that people are pre-purchasing today. They want information. They want you to be transparent. Okay, they want you to make the process of buying to be as easy as it possibly can be. When I go into a car dealership to buy a car, I'm not going into five car dealerships to look at five cars necessarily. I'm going into one dealership to see if I'm validated that the decision I've pretty much made is the right one, and I'm going in there. I'm going to buy that car. And really, what I'm doing is in the process is I'm walking into that dealership with the information that I know what the invoice is on that car. right? So I'm walking in there, and I'm expecting transparency now in the negotiation that takes place. So, you know, if this salesman gives me a price which is $7,000 more than what the internet says it should be, well, it starts a cycle of distrust. And so what I want is to walk into a business and keep the trust there. And so this transparency, I think is really important. So I would boil this down in a nutshell to three things, Paul. You've got to make it easy, you've got to make it relevant, and you've got to make it right. And you put those three things together, and I think you'll meet the customer expectation that people have today.
I couldn't agree more. It's really, you know, as we like to talk about, you know, customers today, consumers today, and the same thing kind of start going over into franchise candidates today. They're more educated, they're more sophisticated, and they're more technologically advanced than ever before. So to our point of talking about the experience starting on social media, they're going to find that information, and to your point about researching the car and finding all this information out there, and which is as important, all the collateral information, to keep the customer focused on the brand they're looking at. It certainly being more technologically advanced than ever before plays a big part of it. And today's consumer and investor alike are also more diligent. They're more cautious. But at the same time, they are also more anxious than ever before, and they want to make sure they get the proper value, the right value, if anything, to exceed their expectations. So I think you're spot on that. This is Franchise Today. We're broadcasting live with Steve Baxter, Senior VP of Worldwide Sales at Set Matrix, who's been kind enough to call in live from London. So big time difference here. Anyway, the show is produced by Franchise Foundry and promoted and marketed by Fishman Public Relations. Steve, we hear a lot about Net Promoter Score, and so many people don't understand what it is. Can you give us a thumbnail definition, if you would? What is a Net Promoter Score?
Sure. So the Net Promoter Score is a leading indicator. It's a score. It's a number. Let's break down those three words: net, promoter, and score. So first of all, it's a score. It's a number. And the good thing about numbers is they go up and they go down. And you can benchmark and you can compare. You're getting better. You're getting worse. So it's a number. It's a score. And so it's a great indication of what's happening. So let's describe what's happening. The promoter part. What we're trying to establish is the impact that your customer is having on you. What impact is the customer experience having on you? And we identify that by categorizing your customers into one of three categories. They're either promoters, passives, or detractors. Now, promoters, as the name implies, these are the customers that love you. They like your brand, they like your product, and they're ready to put their trust, their reputation on the line to tell their friends, to tell their colleagues that you're a good company. So they're promoting you. The passives are somewhat on the fence. They're not ready to recommend you, but neither are they ready to sort of stop using you or say bad things about you. Unlike the third category, which is a detractor. Now, detractor, as the name implies, is they're just not happy. And mm-hmm. Not only are they not happy, they're not happy to the point where they're sort of making it their mission in life to tell everybody how unhappy they are. And what we do to establish this score is we ask a question. And the question is, and I'm sure most people have seen this question, how likely is it that you'd refer us, the brand, to a friend or business associate on a scale of 0 to 10. And detractors are those people who give you a 0 through 6. Passives are those who give you a 7 or an 8. And the promoters are those who give you a 9 or a 10. And quite simply, we take all these responses and we look at the total percentage of promoters and we subtract from that the percentage of detractors. And that number is your score, the net promoter score. So the net part is netting off the promoters and the detractors, mm-hmm. right? So the higher the number, the better. Now, the highest this number can be is 100. And that means every one of your customers is a promoter. And what do promoters do? Well, they do four things. Promoters come back and they buy from you. The second thing they do is not only do they come back, but they come back and they buy more. You know, so if you're a carpet cleaner, they come back, and you know, the first time you cleaned an area rug, the second time you're cleaning their entire house because you trusted them. You've not spent any more money in sales and marketing. You've got the customer coming back, and you've got three times more revenue out of them. So they come back. First thing, the second thing they do is they buy more when they do come back. The third thing that they do is they refer you to your friend, to their friends. They do word of mouth marketing. And, you know, I like to think of sales, I mean, they become your sales force, right? And I like to think of sales and marketing expense as a tax on your organization for not having loyal promoter advocating customers. Because the more of these guys you've got, the less money you need to spend on sales and marketing, and that's straight to the bottom line, right? Mm-hmm. And the fourth thing they do is they give you constructive feedback. Now, this isn't always good feedback, right? But they're giving you constructive feedback. And they're giving you this because they're promoters of your business. They've got a vested interest in you surviving because they like your service and they don't want you to go away. So they're giving you the most valuable asset they have, which is their time, to help you improve your business. So you take these four things that these promoters do for you, and you can see how it adds to the bottom line. And everybody talks about, and everybody understands this in business, that it costs a lot more money to get a new customer than just to keep an existing one. Well, this is the reason why. The reason why, when you go into the detail of this, is because these four things occur when you start to create promoter customers like this. And when we look at detractors, what they're doing is not only are they not coming back, but they're telling people how bad you are. And we all know that when you've had a bad experience, or those people have had a bad experience, they tend to tell far more people than those people who have had a good experience. And when we mm-hmm. think about our own personal experience, you know, if you were coming to Atlanta, Paul, and you said, where's a great place for a steak? And I said, well, I can think of a couple of places you shouldn't go to. You're certainly going to remember those. And
sure.
you're going to have to hear from 7 or 8, maybe 9 or 10 people that have a contradictory opinion to me about that steak place before you're prepared to give them a go. Right. And so but if I was to say, here's a fantastic place, Paul, you've got to go here. The chances are you're not going to look at any of the places. You're just going to go along there and you'll go along your experience and you'll have a great steak. And so, you know, you start to look at the net effect of this. So your net promoter score is truly a leading indicator of growth. Now, I said the highest score is 100. The lowest score is minus 100. This is where every one of your customers is a detractor. So that's what the net promoter score is.
That's it's very interesting about the four steps, because most of us, myself included, as you're going through that, I kind of had an idea of what the first three steps were. It kind of makes sense. But I think what's often ignored, if anything, is getting that constructive feedback. I think, and that's important. And that's also, I think, a way of really developing the relationship with the customer, because by getting that constructive feedback and listening to it, that continues to open the lines of communications, and it makes the customer feel like, you know what, I'm being listened to. And I think, you know, that aspect of it is really important, because, again, going back to so many consumer buying decisions being made after exploring the digital space. It's how are brands listening to their customers today? And I think that's really important. So we've seen a lot of brands take their customer experience obviously serious enough to, especially in the past few years, to start investing heavily into understanding what's going on out there, you know, and, you know, basically, as I just said, listening to their customers. So how do they differentiate themselves now? If every brand is listening to their customers and reacting, you know, how do you get ahead in today's market?
So, you know, it's one thing listening. It's another thing doing something about it. I feel like I'm talking to one of my girls, one of my kids. I have the joy of an 11 and a 13-year-old. It's amazing. Something happens to the ears of 13-year-olds at some point. I'm not sure. She used to listen to me. It's one thing listening. It's another thing doing something about it. It's one thing knowing what your score is. It's another thing knowing why your score is what it is. It's one thing knowing your score is 55. It's another thing knowing how to get it up to 67 or 73, or why is it dropping all of a sudden? And so, you know, over the years, I mean, you mentioned in the introduction, you know, I've been doing this for some years now. You're right, I've been involved with Net Promoter for, gosh, you know, 6 years now. You know, this will be my 75A coming up. And so, wow. You know, over the years, you know, this has all evolved. And so, you know, when I started bringing Net Promoter into the franchising world, you know, 6 years ago, you know, we knew what we knew. And, you know, back then we were talking about, you know, one or two questions, how likely do you recommend us, and then the why question. And then we would look at the why and we start to look at all the reviews and look at the comments and analyze these and say, wow, this is what people are saying. So we're listening to this and, you know, we'll go from there. But what we found over the years is that, you know, for anybody who's using Net Promoter right now, you know, they may have experienced this. You know, they look at their score over a year or over a couple of years, and they look at it and go, like, it's not changing. Why is my score not changing? It's neither going up, it's not going down. Or, you know, I've sort of made some of these. I've made all of these changes. I've listened to what's being said. I've read all these reviews which are coming in. I'm sort of making changes, but it's not changing my score, and I don't get it. Well, what's happening is that you are not linking a customer's satisfaction with their willingness to recommend. And what I mean by that is, over the years, we've evolved Net Promoter to be more than just one or two questions. Now, an ideal Net Promoter discipline is between 5 and 8 questions. And what you're asking is the likelihood to recommend question, and then you're asking satisfaction questions such as, you know, how satisfied are you with the cleanliness of the lockers? How satisfied are you with the friendliness of the staff? How satisfied are you with the value that you're receiving? How satisfied are you with the professionalism? And on a scale of 0 to 10, you're also gauging the satisfaction. And then what you do is you're sort of correlating the importance, the satisfaction that people have with their recommend score. And from that, you can quite easily see, okay, look, everybody's talking about price, but it isn't a driver of the recommend score. So, you know, if we keep focusing on price here, you know, if the two things that people are talking about is price and professionalism, you know, it doesn't mean to say that if you bring down the price, people will accept a lower level of professionalism or the same lack of professionalism that you're showing. Or if you simply increase the level of professionalism, people will be prepared to accept these higher prices. There's no link there. And so what we've learned over the years is how to correlate people's satisfaction with certain things against the willingness to recommend. And so this is what's driving action. So we've learned to really evolve these Net Promoter programs over the years. And so what makes a difference out there is, you know, those brands who are just asking a couple of questions are getting one result. Those brands that are going a step further and asking 5 to 8 questions and then linking those satisfaction scores with that willingness to recommend, they're getting a completely different result, and they're seeing their scores change because they're focusing on the things that really make a difference to the customer. That was probably a longer answer you're looking for, but that's what's happening. That's what we're seeing.
You know, I think it's just very typical throughout, you know, franchising and business in general. It has to evolve. Things have to evolve, especially as we've come through such a bad economic situation, one of the worst that this country has seen in a long, long time. So staying on top of this and evolving with it, especially as consumers are also changing, and I think will continue to change. I think the more we're front and center with the millennials, I think you'll probably see even more changes coming. So, you know, you've been very instrumental in bringing NPS into the franchising space, probably, you know, 6 years or more. And of course, that's all about getting customers to promote the brand. And hearing what you're saying is, you know, that's just not enough anymore, correct?
Well, you know, you're right. You know, it isn't enough. You know, just to promote the brand. You know, what we've got to do is understand precisely, you know, what is driving people's willingness to recommend, and use this insight to turn that into action and drive operational change within the organization. It can't just be another way of marketing or promoting yourself. I mean, it's important. What it's about, if we look at brand brand awareness, you know, promoting the brand, it's a two-way street. Brand awareness and brand loyalty go absolutely hand in hand, and so using NPS just to promote your brand isn't enough. It should be used to create stimulus to improve brand loyalty as well within your customer base. And that's very simple to do, actually, because what you're doing is you're getting all this feedback. You're identifying who your promoters are. You're identifying who your detractors are. And then from that, then, you can open up lines of communication with your customer base, which is segmented based upon their sentiment. And, you know, one of the ways that you create brand loyalty is continued connection to your customer. You know, they say that, you know, you're with brand awareness, you know you're doing it right when the second time somebody wants to buy from you, they don't have to go looking for you. You know you're absolutely there. And so maintaining a front and central presence with your customer base is really important, and NPS is a fantastic way of doing that because you're identifying which customers are your promoters, which customers are your detractors, and what you need to do to both to all categories of customer.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think a big reason, of course, it's the old head in the sand syndrome. A lot of people in business don't want to know who are the detractors, who are the people that wouldn't refer to them. I know last year we had a project that we did for a franchisee up in the Chicago market, claimed they had the biggest and the best with respect to customer service and the customer experience. And I totally disagreed with him and actually stopped him from investing another $30,000 in immediate marketing because he thought he needed more business. And my question to him was, why would you want to drive more people to your business that you're just going to piss off? And he was really taken aback by that. And we, with his agreement and approval, we immediately took over just his Facebook page. And we just asked the question, you know, tell us. And we only had several hundred people on that page, but we had created a good social media footprint for them prior to this. So we asked the question, What did you like about us in the past year, but more importantly, how could we improve? Just a very simple question. And I got to tell you, Steve, it was like a stock market, you know, ticker. I mean, just one after the other, some good, some bad. And the things that came out that were bad were cleanliness, rude employees, just a host of different things that don't cost a lot of money to correct, certainly a lot less than throwing $30,000 at marketing. It identified the need to really train the staff on customer experience and delivering positively memorable customer experience at all times. We actually had customers, like you had said, you know, it's not enough just to listen, but it's you have to take it a step further and you have to look towards operational changes. And he did that. The franchisee did that. And we actually had customers that would go to the location and report back on Facebook that we were doing what we said we were going to do. And it was really remarkable. The long and the short of it is we doubled the number of likes within 30 days. We saw a reach go from 4,000 to 44,000 on Facebook in a month, and we saw an increase in sales. Not a single dollar more was spent on marketing. And this is to your point of getting them to come back and getting them to buy more. We saw an increase over 50% in 1 month just from that one program. And this guy went kicking, and he stood at the annual conference in October. And his exact words were, I got to tell you, he's telling the franchisees, he got to tell you, you know, I thought Paul Segretta was picking on me when he was pushing this, but I went kicking. I went, you know, pulling back as much as I can, but I listened and I followed through. And my sales are up over 50% year over year without spending an additional dollar in marketing. So to that point, the customer experience is a huge part of marketing today.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned about you know about spending you know no more in marketing. You know, it comes back to what I said a second ago. I truly believe this that you know sales and marketing expense, or let's say marketing expense, right? Well, sales and marketing expense is a tax on your organization for not having promoter loyal, advocating customers that's recommending your brand to somewhere else. You know, For every penny that you have to spend to make up, you know, for not having that, that's basically a tax on your company. You know, it's interesting, you know, because I'm not a huge Microsoft. Well, I'm just not a Microsoft fan, right? You know, everything I've got is Apple, and I've got a friend of mine who is real Microsoft fan. We were having a chat the other day, and we got into this debate about Windows Mobile 8. He's the only phone I've ever seen with it. He's got the one. He's got the one phone that somebody's bought. I mean, maybe they sold loads of them. No idea, but he's got one and he loves it. And I said, like, you know, I've not seen this, and I looked up how much Microsoft. Because I'd seen a few ads for this stuff, right? And I looked up how much Microsoft had spent, like over the Christmas period. And the source I read said that Microsoft had spent about $1.5 billion. I mean, maybe the $1.5 billion. I mean, it's almost unfathomable, right? That they their marketing campaign over these, you know, this whole Christmas period was about that sort of money, right? And you think, and I'm like, how many Microsoft Surface tablets have I seen in the wild? None. How many Microsoft Windows 8 phones have I seen? I've seen one, my friend, right? And I think I saw you remember the Zune? I think I saw one of those about 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you look at how much these, like Microsoft is spending on this stuff, and you can't help but think, you know, compared to, say, Apple, it is an amount of money that they have to spend to make up for all of the word of mouth that Apple has from their loyal customer base. So it is essentially a tax on them to make up for not having the same kind of customer base that Apple has.
That's really interesting. So I guess the million-dollar question here, or in this case the billion-dollar question, in your opinion, Steve, is traditional marketing dead? Are we saying now that everything depends on what customers are saying about the brand?
No, I don't think traditional marketing is dead at all. I think the model has changed because, you know, let's look at traditional marketing. What is the traditional model of marketing? The traditional model has stimulus, a first moment of truth and a second moment of truth. So the stimulus is you see an ad in the paper, you hear a radio ad, you see something on television, something that sort of stimulates a desire to look further into this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Traditionally, the first moment of truth, like let's use our buying a car analogy, right? Our car as an example. So then the first moment of truth would be, going into the car dealership and you speaking to the sales rep and maybe taking a test drive. And all along the way, what you're doing is gathering an impression. So you get a first impression when you walk into the dealership. You get a first impression when you meet the receptionist, when you meet the sales rep. You get a first impression when you drive the car. All of these things add up, and you're being sold to. It's a selling experience. And let's say you go ahead and you buy the car. The second moment of truth is when you get the car home and you've driven it, and you're sitting there, and it's just you and your car. We are biologically compelled to share. At that point forward, and for various reasons. One could be that, you know, you're the Jones that you want people to come up with. Look at me, I've bought my BMW, you know, aren't I great? It could be that you just want validation, that you've made the right mm-hmm. choice. This has been a very difficult experience for you. You're spending a lot of money. Did I make the right move? It could simply be that, you've been saving up forever and you know you've made the right decision because you've been saving up for it. You sort of want some, just to share. Look, I did it. I'm proud. They're all great reasons, but you can share that, okay? That's the traditional, but it doesn't really go anywhere, right? Because all of that was just maybe like telling your neighbor over the fence or, telling your family over the phone or showing your friend, you know, when you drive around to their house. That's the traditional model. What's changed is that there's another stage which has been added to this. So, you know, stimulus is still the same. You know, you're still mm-hmm. doing the same ads. You're still doing all of this thing. But what happens next is that as you start to read the stimulus, you see the BMW ad, you see the Audi ad, whatever, you think, this is a cool car. I want to find out more. And so you search it. And the second biggest search engine behind Google is YouTube, right? So you do a search mm-hmm. and you see some videos of it driving through snow and driving through down the interstate, and you do all of these things. You see all these reviews online. You post a thing on Facebook, say, hey, I'm thinking about buying a BMW. What do you think? You get all of this input. And we call this a zero moment of truth because you're actually not interacting with the company or the business. Nobody's creating a first impression. You know, you're not there yet. And so, and you can do all the comparisons. You can go onto the website. You can do a build your own. You can compare your BMW with the Audi. You can do all of this stuff. And you can look at the price and you can think, you know what? I can afford it. If I get this thing for what the internet says I can get it for, I can afford this car. And then you fill out your online app. If you're going to get a loan, you fill out your online application. You get approved by your credit union or whatever. And you are walking into that showroom armed and dangerous. And you go in, and you actually probably know more about that car than the salesman. And you move from a mode of, in the traditional model of having these sort of impressions being created, to one of everything being validated. So you're walking into the dealership and sort of validating, is this the place that I want to buy from? Is this the person I want to buy from? Is this the price that I think I should be paying? So you're validating all of this thing. So this is the first moment of truth. And basically the people selling the car, the only thing they can do at this point is mess it up. And so it's not so much changed the traditional marketing model, but it's certainly changed the traditional selling model in that particular case. And then the second mm-hmm. moment of truth is the same, right? You take the car home, you've driven it, and now you're biologically compelled to share. But where are you sharing it now? You're sharing it on Facebook, on Twitter, you're taking a video of it, you're taking a photograph of it, you're using Instagram, you're doing all of these things, and you post that. And what's happening is this. all of this content that you're creating, and it truly is content, that's the way you need to think about it, is actually creating two things. First of all, it's creating more YouTube videos. It's creating more of everything. So it's actually creating more zero moments of truth. It's just one more video for somebody else to look at, which says, this looks like the car I want to buy. So you're creating more zero moments of truth. And the other thing is that you're doing is because you're creating much more content on the web, you're creating much more brand awareness, you're actually creating more stimulus. So you're making it easier for potential buyers to find the brand. And so you now have this closed loop of marketing taking place, which makes it a whole new world from a marketing perspective. So you still have to do somewhat traditional things in the process. You know, you still got to create stimulus. You still have to have, brochures and all these things. You're doing it a slightly different way. But the traditional marketing certainly is not dead. But the model in the way that we market and we interact with people certainly has changed.
It definitely has, and we've gone over our allotted time, so our live people have dropped off, but, you know, of course, this will all be available in its entirety on the replay, on demand, and it was such compelling information and so important that I just felt they didn't want to interrupt you, but I definitely appreciate you being here today, Steve. How could people learn more about you and your product?
You can go to satmetrics.com, and you can email me directly at steve.baxter@satmetrics.com, and everything you want to know, we will answer.
Yeah, and certainly on Twitter, at stevebaxter999. I will not forget that. Steve, again, thank you so much for being my guest, especially across various time zones and miles. I feel like we were sitting right next to each other. It was great.
Great. Thanks, Paul.
Next week, my guest is Sandy Lechner from Sprout Lab. We'll be talking about branding and specifically about branding in the franchise world and franchise environment. Until next week. My name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.